Good to see everybody. Good to see everybody online. I can't see you, but good morning. Glad you are joining us. We are smack dab in the middle of our series going through the book of Hebrews. And remember, I love this book because you play a type of ping pong with the Old Testament. And it's deeply rooted in the story of the Old Testament. And we see how Jesus is greater than all of these different, you know, angels and greater than Moses. And this week, we're going to begin with the last verse of last week. Because we're going to talk about this one guy, or we don't even know exactly. But we're going to start at Hebrews chapter 6. And this is where we left left off last week. Remember, it's these Christians are being persecuted. Some of them are Gentiles and some of them are Jews that have been converted. They believe Jesus is the Savior. And they are being persecuted by Rome, and they need a letter to give them hope and to remind them who Jesus is. And so he ends with, "We have this hope as an anchor for the soul, firm and secure. It enters the inner sanctuary behind the curtain where our forerunner Jesus has entered on our behalf. He has become a high priest forever in the order of Melchizedek." Now, we don't talk a lot about Melchizedek. Melchizedek is kind of like, I read this neat little story. You know, I'm a big sports guy. And in 1922, at the first bowl game that Texas A&M was a part of, their coach, his name was Coach Dana Bible. I'm not lying. Coach Bible, right? And Coach Bible had he was in this first bowl game against the center, I don't even know where what state they're from, Center College, the Praying Colonels. The Texas A&M Aggies were playing this team, right? And they're in this game, and there's this one guy, his name was King Gill. King Gill was not good enough to make the dress out team. And so he was, he didn't make the, you know, you wear the uniform. And so he was actually upstairs in the press booth because he was helping newspaper reporters put names to numbers. You know, that was his job, right? He was that bad. Well, what happened in the first half is they gave the ball to a couple different running backs, and lo and behold, about four or five different guys got hurt pretty bad. And Coach Bible began to do this math, and he thought, oh my goodness, we are losing players like I couldn't even imagine. And so he tells his coach, go up and you tell King Gill to put on, or you tell him that we're going to need him. So sure enough, the coach goes and gets him. He then goes underneath the stands and puts on the uniform of a hurt guy. He gave him his uniform underneath the stands, and out walks King Gill to play in the second half, and they end up winning by 8 points. And if you know anything about Texas A&M football, thus began the tradition of the 12th man, right? That you're always ready. Out of nowhere, here comes the shadowy figure, and man, he was kind of saving the day. And we know on special teams, there's always one walk-on that plays special teams for Texas A&M, and it's this neat tradition. But it's this kind of out of nowhere, here comes this character. And it's the same thing with Melchizedek, because in Genesis chapter 14, here's what we know happened. Abraham was just told, you're going to be the father of many nations. He then has to go to war to go get his nephew Lot, and he goes and kills four different armies. And on his way back, here's what we see. All of a sudden, there's this Melchizedek, right? We don't know. I mean, he just shows up. Then Melchizedek, king of Salem, brought out bread and wine. He was priest of God Most High, and he blessed Abram. We know later his name changes to Abraham, saying, blessed be Abram by God Most High, creator of heaven and earth, and praise be to God Most High, who delivered your enemies into your hand. Then Abram gave him a tenth or a tithe of all the stuff that he got from defeating those other four armies. All of a sudden, we have Melchizedek, right? King of Salem. Salem was Jerusalem. He was the king of Jerusalem. And not only was he king, what was he? He was king and priest. That was a concept that the Israelites didn't understand. Because remember, here's a picture of the tabernacle, right? And you have, I guess the priest is cut off there, but a little bit. But in you have the holy place, and then you have the veil there, and we've talked about this already. And then, you know, inside the Holy of Holies there, you have the Ark of the Covenant. And that's right above there's the Shekinah glory where God's presence resides. And as the tabernacle was being formed, Moses said in the book of Numbers, he says, you know what? I am going to establish that only in the line of Levi can a Levite, right, one of the 12 tribes, can a Levite become the high priest who goes into the Holy of Holies during Yom Kippur, right? And so I'm going to show you a quick little family map here. And if you see Jacob at the top, right, you see Jacob's name at the top. The reason I show you that is because we know Jacob wrestled with God. We know his name was changed to Israel, right? And there are the 12 tribes. If you count 1, 2, 3, there's Levi. We know Moses came from that. We know Aaron came from that. And the high priest came from that line. But notice that Judah, right, you have King David. And we know, what's the other promise? That from the line of Judah, King Jesus will come. So you have these two lines. You have the Levites, who have the high priest, and you have down from Judah, the king, David, right? The lion of the tribe of Judah, or Jesus, the ultimate lion of the tribe of Judah. And so those are the 12 tribes which give us context for Melchizedek. So here's where we're going to start. This is the first verse of chapter 7. This Melchizedek, and this is, you know, we're back to New Testament now. We just read the Old Testament verse of Melchizedek, and now we're reading Hebrews 7. This Melchizedek was king of Salem and priest of God Most High. He met Abraham returning from the defeat of the kings and blessed him. And Abraham gave him a tenth of everything. First, the name Melchizedek means king of righteousness. Then also king of Salem means king of peace. Without father or mother, without genealogy, without beginning of days or end of life, resembling the Son of God, he, meaning Melchizedek, remains a priest forever. If you read the book of Chronicles, you know that you had to give a genealogy if you were a priest. And what he's saying here is a priest that was without what? He was without genealogy. What are you talking about? Here's what was established in Numbers. It had to come through Levi. What is this? Who is this guy? Now, we have a lot of different commentators. Some people think he is a manifestation of Jesus. Other people think that he is a type of angelic, you know, being, you know, kind of an angel. But verse 4 says, just think how great he was. Even the patriarch, Abraham, gave what? Gave him a tenth of the plunder. Now, the law requires the descendants of Levi, who became priests, to collect a tenth from the people. They were in charge of taking the monies, the tithes and the offerings, that you brought it to the temple. And now the law requires the descendants of Levi, who become priests, to collect a tenth from the people, that is, from their fellow Israelites, even though they are descended from Abraham. What do we know about Melchizedek? He is not a descendant of Abraham, right? He is not a Levite, yet what? He is a priest, and he's being referred to in a major way all throughout Hebrews. In four different chapters, here's this guy, Melchizedek. What does the writer want to teach you and teach me? Why would we come to this chapter? Verse 6, this man, however, did not trace his descent from Levi, yet he collected a tenth from Abraham, and then he blessed him who had the promises. So this king of Salem, Melchizedek, blessed Abraham? What's going on here? I mean, just note the date. Abraham and Melchizedek, this is roughly 2085 BC. The Levites were set apart 600 years later. Right, Moses sets apart the Levites. So 600 years before, there's a priesthood that's established through the line of Levi. Here is a priest that is saying what? Saying, yeah, through my line, right? Through me. What do we see here? Something, there's a change that the writer is trying to tell, particularly the Jewish Christians. You know, a change is happening, has happened, because Jesus is already gone. Do you not realize who Jesus was? Do you not realize? Yes, I know you think of Aaron in the Levitical line, but verse 7, and without doubt, the lesser, Abraham, is blessed by the greater, Melchizedek. In the one case, the tenth is collected by people who die, but in the other case, by him who is declared to be living. One might even say that Levi, who collects the tenth, paid the tenth through Abraham, because we know through Abraham, literally through his seed, comes Levi. Because when Melchizedek met Abraham, Levi was still in the body of his ancestor. So this was a system that was set up, right? The Old Testament sacrificial system was set up. There was a priest, and there was a tabernacle, and then there was a tabernacle moved to the temple. And what the writer of Hebrews is trying to tell you and to me is that we have to be ready, right? We have to be ready for transitions that happen. Because in our lives, we must not let what? We must not let good leadership, good spiritual leadership. I mean, the system of the Old Testament wasn't bad. It was good. But we have to be able to identify when, hey, we can't let us keep that, keep us from what? From perfect leadership, from the perfect leadership of Christ. In other words, I think it would have been easy for people to say, no, I just want to do what my priest tells me to do. I don't want to have to think about Jesus. Okay? Here's my mentor. My mentor is my mom. I don't want to think about Jesus a whole lot. I want to think about my mom's spiritual leadership. Is your mother's spiritual leadership great? Of course. Is your dad, if he is a spiritual leader, is that leadership great? Yes, but you cannot, what? You cannot replace Jesus and stay, right, in this smaller space, right, in the old covenant. You can't let a good Aaronic priest in the line of Levi keep you from what? Understanding who Melchizedek was. Understanding what Jesus really did. And the Jews had to make that decision. They had to make the decision that, you know what, I'm going to believe that Jesus is what? Jesus is, he actually can be the perfect king. He can actually be the perfect priest. And we know the other role in the Old Testament was the perfect prophet, right? Jesus fulfilled all those three major roles. And here, Melchizedek is both king and priest. But if you're an Old Testament, Old Covenant mind, if we get caught and in our ruts, some of us don't want to move. And that was the call. Verse 11. If perfection could have been attained through the Levitical priesthood, and indeed the law given to the people established that priesthood, why was there still need for another priest to come? One in the order of Melchizedek, not in the order of Aaron. Why? Why do we need somebody new? Well, what do we know about the old covenant? What do we know is that God said, here's my grace. I'm going to allow you to kill animals. But how long did an animal sacrifice last? Not very long. You had to do what? You had to keep on sacrificing. So what they experienced, right? What they experienced during that time was a temporary forgiveness. And I think in some ways, there's some of us in this room that we don't want to walk with Jesus as into him being the perfect priest and the perfect sacrifice, being the completed sacrifice, because that means we have perfect forgiveness. And you know the anxiety that is caused by the situation that we're in? The nervousness that we all feel to make a leadership decision or to make a decision publicly or even privately. I mean, there's anxiety. We feel like we're going to make a mistake. And some of us feel like, you know what? Okay, I'm going to come to church and I'm going to confess my sins. And I here's what I can live on, temporary forgiveness. But you actually live out, you know that this has an expiration date. And it's normally a few days for many of us. Okay, I feel his forgiveness, and then I can live that in Monday and Tuesday, but you know what? I know I'm still going to mess up. I still know my anger is going to play itself out. I know that what? That the next payment is due. I don't believe that that payment has actually come fully. And you know what you want to do? You want to keep killing those rams and those goats, right? And those lambs. Because you believe that the forgiveness that's offered to you is only temporary and it's got an expiration date. And if you have that type of theology, if you have Old Testament, right, temporary theology, man, everything, it's coming. When's the payment due, right? It's like, when's the mortgage due? When do we have to? I got to make sure I pay the electric bill so it doesn't turn off, right? All the lights don't go off. I got to make sure, right? And that's the way we live. And so many of us, you know, the word Salem, king of Salem, you know where that word is derived from? The word shalom, right? Which means peace, wholeness. He is the king of shalom. That's what Melchizedek is in the line, right? Jesus is in the line of giving you peace. But I think we put the standard of temporary forgiveness on ourselves, but I think we also do it to other people. In relationships, we say, okay, I'll forgive you, but ultimately you got to make this payment to me, right? You got to keep those payments coming. That's the way it works, right? Because in America, we're very transactional. And hey, they knew that the next feast or next festival or next Sabbath was coming. So I need to come and I need to go to the temple and I need to give my sacrifice and my tithe, right, to the priest. The high priest, the Aaronic priest, the Levitical priest, so what? So that I can be forgiven, at least get 48 hours of rest. And the writer of Hebrews is saying, what are you doing? Everything has changed. That is an old way of doing things. I watched this awesome documentary on PBS, right? You don't really see those. It's very exciting, you know, when I say that. Those things put you to sleep, right? But it was a story of how the invention of the transistor took, you know, all these vacuum cubes that kept electricity going and they would burn out. The transistor allowed for electricity to work continually. And then when the Russians actually landed on the moon, got into space, Sputnik, it freaked America out, right? And next thing you know, it was like... everybody started wanting to kind of technologically advance so that we could defend ourselves and hopefully move past the Russians. Well, there was a problem, is that when you used germanium, right, this element, and it was heated, right, it was very, you didn't know what was going to happen. And they had to change. The transistor used germanium. That's the way it worked. But then there was this massive change, and the element had to move from germanium to what? To silicon. And that's what started the whole Silicon Valley. And then you realize, oh my goodness, all these different corporations right there in that valley that was just farmland in the 50s turned into all of the, you know, the highest tech companies that we know. I think his name's James Noyce, becomes the CEO of Intel. And you realize you have to make this transition. Germanium combusts, or it acts, you know, sporadically or spontaneously. I don't know. It was not working correctly. They couldn't control it. You had to make this jump. It's the same thing. People in the Old Testament did not want to make the jump to what? To the line of Melchizedek. That Jesus would actually come in the line of Melchizedek. Verse 12 says this, for when the priesthood is changed, the law must be changed also. Right? It's a big switch, Old to New Testament. This is when Jesus comes. It's a different world. He of whom these things are said belonged to a different tribe. Melchizedek, ultimately Jesus, belonged to the tribe of Judah. And no one from that tribe has ever served at the altar. No one from the tribe of Judah has ever served as a priest. And you're telling me that Jesus can be both king and priest? Yes. For verse 14, for it is clear that our Lord descended from Judah. And in regard to that tribe, Moses said nothing about priests. And what we have said is even more clear if another priest like Melchizedek appears, one who has become a priest not on the basis of a regulation as to his ancestry or from the Levites, but on the basis of what? The power of an indestructible life. What does that mean? The power of Easter Sunday. The power of the one, the power of the one that the grave could not hold him. Because Aaron's dead. All those Levite, all those priests, they all died. But the priest that comes through the line of Melchizedek, right? For it is declared, you are a priest forever in the order of Melchizedek. You know where that's taken? It's the only other reference in the Old Testament. Psalm 110, written by David. He will be a priest forever. Do you believe? Do you believe in this new way, in this new covenant, in this perfect priest who could not sin and ultimately could not be destroyed? The former regulation is set aside because it was weak and useless. It was based upon what? The law. For the law made nothing perfect. And so, what do you mean by that, Frank? I mean, when Moses came down with the Ten Commandments, it was supposed to be this prescription that would help Moses and all his descendants be perfect, be more holy. And then Paul says, you know what the law does to us? This is Romans 3:20. This is what Paul says about the law. Therefore, no one will be declared righteous in God's sight by the works of the law. You cannot be declared righteous. Rather, through the law, we become conscious of our sin. You know what he's saying? The law is a mirror. When you read, do not lie, and you know, you tell half-truths all the time. When Jesus says, look, when I say please, in your anger, do not sin, you think you don't murder, but if you hate somebody, you do. It is, you cannot not hate somebody. When you read the law, that's how you realize how sinful you are. That's the scary part of this. And so you need a what? You need a perfect priest, but you also need a perfect law keeper. Rather than through the law, we become conscious of our sin. And then Romans 5:20, the law was brought in so that the trespass might increase. If you read the Bible and you read the law of Jesus, you know what you're going to realize? The rabbit hole goes farther than you ever thought. The rabbit goes farther than I ever thought. You're going to realize you're more sinful than you ever could possibly imagine. And then you will just, I mean, you will feel despondent about that. But where sin increased, what? Grace increased all the more. If you understand how sinful you are, what's the flip side of that? I am more loved than I could possibly imagine. Oh my, what? I didn't think if I have a big S, right? A big sin, I need a huge cross. Grace has to increase. In other words, you will love Jesus all the more. And all of this book is trying to tell us, look, look to Jesus. Do not look. Yes, Aaron was a signpost. Moses was just a signpost, like on I-75 that says Jesus that way. That's all he was, right? That's all the great men of faith were. That's all the tabernacle was. It was a signpost that says, hey, the real tabernacle is coming. The real temple is coming. In fact, I will turn you into a temple. And then the last verse, this is 19, we're going to take the second half next week. And a better hope is introduced by which we draw near to God. And a better hope is introduced when you look at this and you realize that your perfect priest has gone before you. He can be a priest, and he's the perfect king, and he's in the line of Melchizedek, and he's not in the line of Aaron, and he's not in the line of Levi. Here's what Paul says about this, Galatians 3:23-25. Before the coming of this faith, we were held in custody under the law, locked up until the faith that was to come would be revealed. So the law was our guardian until Christ came, that we might be justified by not works, right? We are not justified by works. We know that, but by faith. Now that this faith has come, we are what? We are no longer under a guardian. Some of you need to be unlocked because you are still locked up by the law. And you think, I'm living by the law. I'm going to be sanctified by my sweat. And all of this is saying, look, he has come. He has freed you. The law, yes, look at it. It will lead you to understanding how sinful you are, but then that means you need a big Jesus. And once you understand that, you know what? Okay, I'm free. You know what I'm free from? I'm free from self-hate. I'm free from other hate. I'm free from living a life, a small life of sarcastic humor, where I just try to minimize all things so I don't have to deal with my life. I'm free. What could I be for my wife? What could I be for my kids? What could I be for my school? What could I be for my community? What could I be for, hey, a fractured racial world? We're free because we are no longer under condemnation. Rather, through the law, we become conscious of sin, but where sin increased, grace increased all the more. Where are you this morning? What would it do to you to look at the law and look at your sin, but realize, hey, I'm free because of what Jesus has done. I'm free, right? I am tired of getting this weekly forgiveness. Or maybe for some of you, monthly forgiveness. I'm going to come in and feel my, I'm coming in, you know, first Sunday of September, I'll last me through September. But man, October, I need to get, you know, I need to get another temporary month-long forgiveness dispensation, right? No, he has come that you might have it perfectly, that you might have it completely. What would it mean for us to believe that? Imagine what this could do for, what this did for the believers in Rome who were under all kinds of duress. Because, you know what? We trust in Jesus as our king, Jesus as our prophet, Jesus as our priest, not this coming election, right? Either way, not that, not your family, not your mentor. It's Jesus. He is the perfect one. All of the Old Testament told us that. All of these fellows are going to let you down, but he won't. And so, once again, Jesus is the climax of the covenant. He is called to be the climax of our lives. Please, let's pray and ask God that he would work in our hearts today.